have a motion to approve tonight's agenda?
I will.
Can I have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So moved. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes of the June 5th public hearing?
Move it.
And second? I think you guys said it at the same time. Okay.
Second.
Okay, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
So moved.
Susan, before you move into item four, can I ask a question about clarification?
Okay.
If that's where you were going.
Uh-huh.
Based on the budget presentation information for the summer school from K to 12, there was $24,000 that would be allotted to that program or those programs if consolidation went through. The item tonight has that number at $38,000. Can you explain, or someone explain, what the difference is between the $24,000 and the $38,000?
The way I can best explain it, and I'm not quite sure that I have this absolutely right from this Jeff Mayo, because he is the individual that prepared these numbers after discussion and meetings with the administrators. And there are some administrators here tonight, so please correct me if I'm wrong. But I do know that since that determination, there had been a discussion about when you have summer school open, you also need to have a school nurse available on hand. So I'm thinking that perhaps that may explain the additional funds. Although I am not entirely sure, and that once again would be something that would need to be confirmed. And I don't want to pick on any administrators who are here tonight, but if they have any knowledge or any information.
No, I don't know any of any reason why that expense. My only guess would be that I'd have to be at the secondary level because the elementary hasn't changed. So
was that just an erroneous number listed on the budget present information, because it has summer school K to 12.
Again, I cannot speak to that. Mm-hmm. I can, however, find the information and post it on the website for clarification.
How do we allocate money to us? I mean, I'm interested in going through with this plan, but how do we vote on an unknown number?
The number is known. That is the recommendation right there. I simply can't answer the question as to why the change. But that is the current updated number, and as I said, it may have something to do with the fact that a school nurse is needed on hand, and I don't know if that was part of the conversation, but I know that it was discussed.
And does that include special education, possibly, for my program?
I don't believe so. This is specifically the summer school piece.
It can't be confirmed and then table it and then bring it back after the meeting?
It could be pending, Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong, it could be pending, you know, board approval on clarification.
It's only till it would be to this meeting, unless you
change
it to
the next
meeting.
No, I don't
know. Jeff Mariello is the one that did that design.
And it would also be very helpful if you had such questions to ask prior to the meeting so that I have that time to gather that information so that I'm not wasting your time.
Well, you're not wasting my time. I was willing to have a public discussion on that.
Okay. What was the number again? I'll just reach out to the other administrators to see if anybody has it. How did it change?
It changed by 14,000.
From what to what?
From 24,000 to 38,000.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom.
Is that this
one?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong thing.
I don't think the special ed was included in that, but that was
but
it may have to do with
the
nurse because that
is
just
recent. But 14,000 is a lot,
it's been there. I've got a piece of it. There may have been other things.
Sure.
I know that when the administrator sat down with us, you know, all representing from K to 12, and what the needs were. It's going to be in there now, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're in the paper. I do, I know. That's what I'm trying to see if it's in there. As a collective number. And probably because it was already in that.
I texted all three of them at the same time, and I haven't got a response. I don't know if the phones are on or what. Sorry. I can try and call them if you like. Scott Richard just replied no. So that's the elementary, if you know.
Because then that's money that has to be raised moving forward in next year's budget.
So with that being said, can I have a motion to approve Board of Education items for A, B, and C? With the language that for A is pending the explanation from Jeff Moriello to let us know exactly where the funds are broken down to.
And shall we post it on the website so that the public is aware as well?
Absolutely.
Excellent idea.
absolutely.
I just had a question about C. That's just, they're just using the buses. They have no drivers for that? They're using their own drivers?
I believe Good Tidings pays for the buses.
They're paying
They pay for the drivers.
That's the cost of transportation.
Okay.
Is this both mileage and driver cost?
The mileage and driver. Yes, that is inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Which is different than what the town of Carroll and the town of Durham use for their summer programs?
I believe
what
so.
They pay
strictly for bus driver salary.
So Good Tidings and item C here is going to pay for driver salary and mileage?
Yes.
And the contractual rate?
Yes.
Big difference in the amount of time that they were going to
Whereas
The town of Durham has just periodically, so this is going to be extensive mileage and use of the buses. So they recognize that and are willing to pay the amount that was provided and figured out by the garage, by the transportation.
And it's transportation to and from their day camp, I believe. Mm-hmm. They're not going on a trip somewhere.
Are they signing a contract?
Right.
Is this contractual?
Is this contractual?
Yeah, no, I had a conversation actually this weekend.
Sorry? I have no idea if they're signing a contract or whatever. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to have to be some kind of agreement.
Once again, this is something that was discussed during Jeff's, it came up and was manifested when Jeff was away, so we will put together a contract. And then would you like that language included as well? Provided a contract is prepared and signed. Does it seem appropriate?
Janet, when you guys use it for the rec program, do you guys sign any kind of, is there a contract with the town of Carroll? For the summer rec?
School?
Or some kind of document?
No, the school board approves.
Just that we use that service.
Right. They just submit a written request to the bus driver. We don't do the bus driver to the school district.
You're renting the buses.
We're renting just the buses.
Just the bus drivers.
Yeah. But Roger, do we have a written request?
I have a written request from the user.
Okay.
Yes.
And do we have that same kind of thing from Good Tidings, I would imagine?
I believe so. I haven't seen it, but I believe it was a written request.
Yeah.
So that language includes both for drivers and mileage?
It's a set rate for, which is encompasses all, wear and tear, mileage, bus drivers, insurance, whatever.
It's a cents per mile type.
Yeah.
From revenue.
I think that's why it says cost of transportation.
You just pay the bus driver.
I read it in something that the entire board rezoned. Can we get a copy of something in our packet? I don't have my computer here, but I feel like I read what the cost per mile was.
$3.73.
I think it was in our supporting documentation.
$3.73 per mile.
That just seems to be very different than what the current arrangement is between the towns of Durham and Carroll.
Because this is a private, this is a separate thing. Different scenario.
Who are the kids that are going to this? Who are the kids in the community,
is my understanding. They're doing a day camp and an overnight camp.
Who's going to the summer school? Is that the question?
Good Tidings.
Yeah, I read that, but that didn't explain it.
This one is just for the school days. For 30 days. And what I am hearing is that Carrie is asking that rather than just a written request, because it is significantly different, and this is not just the towns, it is a separate private entity. He's asking that we actually devise a contract and enter into a contract or contractual agreement with them.
Like a fee for service kind of thing.
Okay.
So B would be, or C rather, would be pending written contract. And with those modifications, can I have a motion to approve?
Move it.
Can I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Can I have a recommendation to approve 5A through F?
Move it.
I'll second.
favor? Do you have a question?
No, I don't.
Any opposed? So moved. Board of Education items?
Can I pick up the one second? Dennis, can you just start on the last one?
Yes. He came here. The discussion is as to the Board of Education's reorganizational meeting. There's a request to move the meeting forward from the, I believe it's the 8th to the 1st. So we would need to...
The 10th.
I'm sorry, the 10th to the 1st. So we would need to add that to the school calendar.
It was on the one we just voted on.
So do we need to do that? Is the I'm confused as to what the request is. Is the request for all of the agenda items at the reorganizational meeting being moved from the 10th to the 1st, or are there specific items that you would like to see on the 1st?
Specific. Agree. I think you said the 10th items were going to remain on the 10th, correct? Is that what I saw?
You're having a regular reorganization meeting agenda. You're moving up the agenda to the 1st, and that would be
so we would
your regular
new board members,
right.
Sworn in, president, vice president,
all that stuff, all that. The other appointment of officers and stuff.
Committees will be 10.
Typically, then you would do in the past, what they've done is have the reorganization meeting, and then they've gone into the business portion of the meeting for, say something like this, a regular meeting. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to have a regular meeting afterwards, if you have agenda items or discussion items that you want to do that night, mm-hmm. if you could let us know so that we could have that on the agenda and advertise it that way, mm-hmm. that is going to be a reorganization meeting and a regular meeting.
I think discussion items with the new board need to be going forward or not going forward with grade level realignment. There's so many people all over all agree that this is not efficient to go through with this. There's different ideas thrown out by Mr. Naha. There's ideas of consolidation. I want to discuss it. The Seversky study, all the studies we've had throughout the year with the new board members, and make a decision based on the best plan for the students. I think we're ignoring the students and the decision that was being made the other night. I understand the points from the community, but most of the people who spoke, I never heard anything on student achievement. My number one priority is students and their progress, and I want to choose a pathway for the success of the students, and that needs to be spoken of and voted on what path we need to go on. And I don't believe this is the right one. I'd like to see the original consolidation vote be brought back up again.
Okay, so you want discussion item on it, and you would like the motion that we had on the last meeting for closing the room back on? Is that
it's not closing Durham.
No.
It's a consolidation.
And I'd love to offer after that, whichever way, if it were to pass, to have open discussion on repurposing. Because there's nothing, no one up here is for it. Closing that building. No one wants to do that in the community. We want to find something for that building in the community. So I would like to have a discussion on that if that item were to pass, to have discussion on repurpose.
So you want discussion items and a vote, or just discussion items?
Both.
Okay, so here's one question.
Sure.
The motion that was on the last agenda.
needs to be worded that way. I guess it has to be worded that way.
That was my question.
But that's not the intent to use that language of close, is not our intent by any stretch. So I don't know what language you need to use to
consolidate to
look.
Maybe if you could maybe email us with what, so we can then bring it to the lawyers, because that's basically
okay.
where we got the language from. So maybe if you can email us with what, you know, could possibly
okay.
do.
And I also wanted to explain that the reason that this item was placed on tonight's agenda was, once again, at the directions of the lawyer, they want to make sure that there is transparency and that there is clarity so that people understand, you know, what will be discussed in full at the meetings.
So are we not having a meeting on July 10th? Or we are still having a meeting on July 10th?
I put on for still another regular
okay.
meeting.
That's what I thought, but I just did sound like
for the first, and still another regular
right.
meeting. But I did put still for another meeting on the 10th.
We have on July 10th, there will be a workshop at 6 o'clock and regular meeting at 7.
Okay. But it sounded like you were asking in the beginning, were we not doing that? That's what it sounded like to me. But what are you asking?
I'm sure something is going to happen too. Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to see on that?
Gentlemen,
anything else you want to see? Beth, anything else you want to see on that meeting?
Mm-hmm.
No?
So they're going to discuss it.
Okay. Public participation? Anyone want to say anything? Yes, Ms. Goza?
I just wanted to say, I think it's my understanding of the back and forth that we voted to go with summer school, is that correct? Table of, yes,
yep.
we voted. So I just want to say thank you as a teacher and as a mom. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much for implementing that.
Actually, I'm going to piggyback on, Gary, one of your comments about student achievement. And as I'm speaking as a school counselor first, board president, or CDTA president second, I think they're one and the same at this point, as you all know. Don't forget, when you talk about student achievement, all of the ancillary services and the support processes that happen. When you have your discussions as far as consolidation, when you have how those services be delivered in the optimal spaces, how you deliver your art, your music, your you don't have a lot of tech, obviously you don't have much, you have technology, but it's more computer-based, K-5, because I don't want to see all the strides we've made, AIS, speech, music, art, band, chorus, you name it, be, you know, the proverbial art on a cart, music on a cart, speech is tucked into a closet where the kid can't hear because they got humming machines like this. So that's one of the things that, regardless of your discussions and without some significant input from all those support folks, it would be short-sighted. That's why
I think
push out there, you know, because you kind of hit achievement.
It
you
should
know, that's
be considered. And people should speak up. The
yeah.
teachers in those areas should speak
yeah.
up to
yeah.
to state whether that could work or will not work.
Yeah.
That's what we want to hear from.
Yeah.
I don't know the daily operations of the district, the school.
Yeah.
I'm in there to see, you know, when kids arrive throughout the day, throughout the year, and dismissal. But I don't know how it's working individually for every teacher. I know a lot of teachers I spoke with. And they tell me how it's working, but we need to hear from everybody to make an important decision like this. Can it work?
Yeah.
Would we be hindering it in any way?
Yeah, exactly.
So I agree with you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, Mr.
Ross. I'd like to add a few more remarks to what I talked about before. Related to the quality of the education, the proposal to reconfigure the district is really aimed at two main factors, and we've heard about them at the last board meeting. One is the long bus rides, and the other is crowding in the schools. And the reconfiguration will reduce both the transportation burden and the crowding in the schools, because under the current Princeton plan, we have one school for each grade. So everybody in the whole district has to converge on that school for that grade. Under the consolidation plan, it's going to be the same thing. Everybody in the whole district has to converge on one school. You're still going to have long bus rides. You're still going to have a very crowded school. Dr. Seversky said you're going to have to expand the capacity from 348 to 600. And I do not recall seeing anywhere in the study any cost provided for that. And at that, even with that expansion and his projections for enrollment, it's going to be 95% full. They've lost the flexibility. And what we have currently is we are fortunate in the two schools, even as they are now configured, we have a total of 11% spare capacity. And it's paid up spare capacity. It costs almost nothing to keep it going. And with the new plan, if you do that kind of thing, if you configure a Carroll zone, a Durham zone, and an intermediate zone, then every parent can either have his child go to the closest school, or if in the intermediate zone, they can go to either school. If they want to go from the Carroll zone to Durham or Durham zone to Carroll, they can still do that if they provide the transportation. But anybody in an intermediate zone, and an intermediate zone here is going to be between the halfway point, which is somewhere between Blackthorn and Saloon on 145. That's 6.1 miles from each school. Okay. Everybody north of that would be in the Durham zone. The other line, the partition line, instead of minimizing the transportation, it minimizes crowding by evenly distributing the spare capacity. You move that line until you have 11% spare capacity in each school. And between those two lines is an intermediate zone. There are those students who go to either school. So this is something that's going to be very appealing to a lot of parents, having that choice of sending their student to either school, and to let them go to the same school from K through 5. They don't have to change schools unless they want to.
Can I ask a question about a possible scenario?
Yes.
So you're saying that the parents have the right to choose which school to send their children to?
Yeah, parents have the right to decide which school.
So what happens if more parents want to send their kids to a school that no longer has capacity? What happens to that choice of parents in that situation, that scenario?
There are a couple of things you can do. You can move the partition line. Normally, you would move the partition line toward the school that is becoming crowded.
So is the partition line, as that changes in that intermediate zone, does that now prevent parents from having choice of which school to send their children to?
No, they all, any parent in the whole district can decide. All we're talking about now is school transportation. If you live in the Durham zone, any place.
I thought you were just talking about school choice. The parents have a choice.
They have a choice of which school to enroll in.
Yes, so okay. I'm saying there, what happens when parents choose to enroll their kids into a school and that school is now reached capacity? Do parents still have a choice, or how does that choice take place if there's 20 spots available?
This is why you don't want to throw away spare capacity. Now, the way Paul Seversky
described it. I don't think you're understanding my question. I'm saying that what happens to parent choice when that capacity is no longer available?
The only way that choice is that scenario is ever going to develop is if you totally fill up Durham.
That's what I'm saying, or vice versa.
Right now, you've got 348 capacity at Carroll. Okay, now Paul Seversky said, increase it to 600. If you do that, you're not going to fill it up. You see what I'm saying? You're going to have 33% spare capacity.
I'm saying eventually parental choice no longer becomes a choice. And I'm just thinking if that scenario emerges there, then how do you deal with parents who want their children to go into a school where that capacity no longer exists?
Under Nick's proposal, dramatically more choice. If you have two elementary schools, than if you have one. Under a theoretical situation that could happen, although I'm not so sure that it would, we could eventually run out of choice. But with this situation that is under the consolidation, we don't have to run out of it. It's gone. So the two schools makes for dramatically better choice. Maybe it's not perfect, but two things are. And I think it offers far more opportunity for choice than no choice at all, which is the consolidation scheme.
It absolutely maximizes flexibility.
We always, I mean, I can remember when my children were in elementary school, and I'm from Carroll. They had the choice to be able to go to Durham as long as they were transported. Somewhere along the line, that changed, and I don't know when that changed. I think it had to do with the possibility of increasing class sizes because parents wanted their children to go there.
Well, then why do we want to close it?
Part of the problem with why parents weren't allowed to choose at a certain point was because the class sizes in Durham were getting to the point where we would have to hire new teachers. The teacher contract says that they're only supposed to have so many students in a class. If you go over that student level, you have to hire a new teacher. If you have even just one grade that you have to hire a new teacher for one student, suppose you have one extra student. Yes, you have to hire a new teacher, not that she's going to have one or he have one student in that classroom, you would separate them out. But the cost to the district then starts to rise because of that. And that's why we stopped allowing parents to decide where their child was going to go, because you could actually put an additional six teachers in that building if the influx was to bring students to the Durham building. And the district could not afford that at that point in time. And that's why we stopped that policy.
That could still happen in a consolidated school district. The plan now is to have 21 students per class. And the contract, teacher contract, is to split it, I believe, at 32. Is that not right?
Yeah.
So.
Which then means you have all those additional students that you, just because our ideal class size is 21 doesn't mean that we can't go over the 21. It's just an ideal class size. And until you had to break out of that ideal class size, I mean, until you had to break out of that class and get another teacher, talking another 10 students.
You're going to get another teacher anyway if you get up to 32. I mean, the number of teachers goes with the number of students.
But the difference,
it doesn't go with the number of school buildings.
Right.
But the,
which is why we moved, part of the reason that we moved to this grade realignment program was so that we could have students keep it the same in both buildings, because that was the largest argument, was that Durham class sizes were larger than Carroll building.
And when you had five sections in a grade, then, and you had 23 kids in a class, then you could go 24, 24, 24, 24,
right.
24, if five more moved in.
You can handle if you're
When I was in Durham, we actually had a situation where in October we had to split a kindergarten class.
Right.
Because we just happened to have like two, three kids move in, put us over the edge, and then right in the middle of October we had to have to split the class. And that was hard. Hard for kindergartens.
Yeah.
What would happen in that scenario if two or three children bumped it up, exited the district?
Exactly. Then you're
Then you're down. And that was the rationale by grade realignment, was because then you have equity in terms of where you can move students. and what you provide to them.
Have
and we are a consolidated school district. We have been a consolidated school district, Carroll Durham School District. That's what we are.
Well, with this plan, you have maximum equity in terms of having the spare capacity. Yes, if you run out of spare capacity in one school, you could say, you could cut it off and say, no, sorry, we're full at that school. Your school is Carroll or your school is Durham. But that is the least likely scenario to develop if you keep both schools open.
I just wanted to talk about the good mention there about the two things about overcrowding and the long bus rides. Roger, I don't know if this is putting you on the spot or not, but just the number of long bus rides, long being approaching or around an hour,
right.
Will there be a greater number, equal number, or fewer number of those particular long bus lines under consolidation versus Brett's?
Under consolidation would be less bus runs, less time on the bus.
Thank you.
But under this plan, you wouldn't have anybody going further than just 6 miles.
I thought on that analysis that the transportation department
you don't have to do that, though.
Just to follow up the point there, that according to the analysis from the transportation department, that in order to maintain proportionality in the number of schools between Carroll and Durham, that line there, the redistricting, would be somewhere about a half a mile away from Carroll Elementary. So I'm wondering what that does for those kids who are living on the lower end of 23 and 145.
It's the same problem that consolidation will bring to the students that live in north of Durham. They're going to have to go a very long bus ride to...
But I'm asking our head bus driver, and he's saying that there are fewer long bus rides.
There have to be shorter bus rides if people go to the schools that are closer to their home.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. I live 4 miles from Carroll and I take them on the bus for 50 minutes.
I'm assuming that you use the state-of-the-art student movement and scheduling plans, but as someone who has a little experience, it would be really nice to see this on paper. It's not quite clicking for me how that can be. It's anecdotal information, with all due respect. It's always just a little one having to be mischievous. It would be nice to see the actual scatter diagrams, the routes, and the software program that's been used. I'm sure it's perfect, but it sure would be nice to see. Because I'm having a hard time seeing how if there are two schools that have longer bus rides. I probably agree.
Let me suggest something. Now, imagine, if you will, that we're talking about 600 students in two schools. Now, imagine, if you will, same district size, but we multiply everything by 10. We've got 10 times as many students, 10 times as many schools, 10 times as many buses. Yes. So 6,000 students, 20 schools, 10 times as many buses. Is there any doubt in your mind, and the schools are scattered according to population, is there any doubt in your mind that students would live closer to their schools?
You're presenting a theoretical argument that doesn't
fit
right here.
It's the same thing as going from one school to two schools. As going from two schools to 20 schools, it's just on a smaller scale. There's no doubt that two schools will reduce the total transportation burden. And I think that they could put the numbers together, put the routes together, and the longest route and the number of hours that the average student spends on the bus. And the way it's done is that anybody who lives in the intermediate zone can go to either school, so nobody has to go to a school farther away from where they live. They do not have to go to the further school the way they do now. And in a consolidation plan, there's, you're going to have people coming from all over the district, not necessarily to the closer school.
So just teasing that out one more time, and then I'll be quiet on this. So let's say that if this plan was enacted, and everybody who's in the original boundary lines continue to go to their schools, are we going to end up with what we had 2 years ago? That's where there was an unequal distribution of resources for Durham compared to Carroll. Is there any evidence to suggest that people in Carroll, as the districts are now drawn, will change their school enrollment and move to Durham as students? Is there any evidence to support that?
Mary, when we wrote back to the state on the focus school situation, one of the points in your letter was that in a district with more than one elementary school or grade, that it would be entirely acceptable and appropriate for a parent to pick a preferred school, and that school preference, I think you said under New York State law, would need to be honored. So I don't know whether this improves the complexity or deteriorates, diminishes the complexity of the situation, but I mean, it's entirely possible, given that it would no longer be something that would be completely optional. It would be now under the mandate of New York State law, the parents could pick the preferred elementary school. I am not sure what kind of a population shift one would see. It would be prejudicial for me to project, and I don't need to do that. But it certainly would be possible that there would be a dramatic shift, irrespective of the complexities it might bring to the district. I mean, maybe that's a negative, but honestly, I think choice is a very nice thing to have whenever it's possible. And I think that's why, I hope I'm not quoting you wrong, but I know that you said, you know, dear New York State, that's not applicable in this district since there is only one grade level available for each of the,
I'm having a difficult time recalling that language, and
it stuck out pretty well when I read the letter. I thought, oh my goodness, but I'm entirely capable of misreading something, you know, it wouldn't be the first or second or third or 50th time. But it was, I could probably pull it off the, it was in the Department of Education response package that I went through.
How many?
I mean, you did, I know you. Okay, I may be misquoting you, but I know you did write the letter. But maybe I misquoted you. Maybe I can find it. But I don't know that you're still here all night.
How would we get an accurate schedule when you don't know who's going to choose where? If you had to draw something up for us to just look at, you don't know what student on the, right now the Durham line, where you project it is the end of Main Street Carroll, pretty much on that map.
That's the line that equalizes the current 11% spare capacity.
But all the people within the intermediate zone, you don't know which way they're going to choose. So how would they draw the inaccurate timeline of bus route when we don't know the choice?
Well, computer programs now, I mean, I went to graduate school, I'm hard-pressed to admit it, 4 years ago. And we did routing problems with punch cards. And it was torturous, but we did it. Now, I suspect there's an app. And I suspect you could run, if you chose, in about 3 minutes, 15 scenarios. I'm just guessing that the routing problems that were impossible when I was a poor little MBA student are now, like everything else, calculators were just coming into use too. That just goes to show you how archaic, I mean, the pyramids were there. I bet you could run 15 alternatives and see. I really do.
How many kids are in the intermediate zone? Do you know how many?
I'm guessing between 1 and 200, but I'm not sure. I don't, I'm, I think the...
So there's a possibility that between 1 and 200 kids could be eliminated off transportation completely?
No.
If they all choose it?
Well, sorry, there's no...
Well, maybe 100. If you
I think... I got to find the letter, Mary. I don't think you can eliminate them. I think they can choose.
Well, then they have to get their own
presentation.
No, I don't think so.
I thought you just said if you want to go to the opposite school, you have to get
I think the New York State... Don't you hate being quoted, especially if I'm wrong?
I really would like to see to review.
Okay.
Are you talking about, Gary, about that if you choose to go outside the district, that you are currently
responsible?
Isn't that what you said, Ms. Bahas?
Yeah.
That you, if you choose to go outside your particular district, then you have to provide transportation.
That's if you're like in the Durham zone and you want to go to the Carroll school. That means you're farther from Carroll than you are for in Durham, and you want to do that, yes.
You're in that intermediate zone.
You're in the intermediate zone, you can go to either one, okay?
There is some for school choice. There is some law for that. If you have a failing school, and then the state, right, then the state, you're allowed to, you know, if you have a comparable program, the same grade level. And I'm not quite sure if we're at that stage yet, because we would have to send letters out and inform everybody of that. The other thing is that I really want the board to really consider, if you were considering this, is to look at the demographics and how that would change in the schools. That's a really serious issue that can't be overlooked. And any study that would have to include the demographics of the students or the populations of the schools, because we do not want to go back into a situation where we are like in a situation with haves and have-nots or something along those lines. We're consolidated, we're coming together as a district. You know, and we can't go back to that.
Once schools become stronger and a parent, you know, two parents work, they have to put their child on the bus. They don't have that choice. That choice is gone, as opposed to one who stays home and they can put them in and take them to the one school that's performing better.
Password protection. I can't use the.
Is there one particular demographic that stands out, or is it a collection of demographics?
You know, I have no idea. What I would ask is that if we were going to do it, so we would really study and look at the demographics of the population and
sir,
where
I
the
one thing that Mary has always attuned us into is poverty.
Poverty. Well, I mean, of course, jumps right out at me. Yeah.
And special needs. Yeah.
Certainly, number of parents.
Right. And special needs as well. Yeah.
But I would ask also that you do something, whether you take a poll or whatever you do, to get a sense of the stakeholders' preference for whether they would rather have two elementary schools or consolidate into one or stay with the Princeton plan. Because everything I am hearing says there is a lot of support for going to two K-5 schools.
Yeah, but that's not
fair. I want to comment on Mr. Carr. I think when I just heard what you said, my understanding of that point is that you can choose to go to another school outside of your district. It's not necessarily within a district.
If I could get on the web here, I could tell you in a half minute, because I now know right where it is. If you could whisper the password to CAFE to me, I could get on and I could read the damn district. Darn.
Yeah, the district isn't focused at
one
school.
You don't have a choice to go from one to the whole school to another school within the same district.
I think it's in reference to going to an alternative school.
I think so. Yeah.
That's what the state provides.
Does anybody
and before them? Sending out any letters or not sending out any letters, I certainly checked with the attorneys regarding, you know, the intent of the law and it was applicable in this particular case.
Let's go.
Hi. I just want you to think about, you know, when we talk about academic achievement and success, and I'm not really sure where she got the numbers, if it's even true or not, but it seems like Mary was saying that it was true, that B. Clappin talked about the success of the teachers coming together. And so going back to a K-5 in each building, I think would not necessarily be the right choice. I think, you know, having the teachers K-5, you know, together, you know, for not only vertical alignment, but horizontal alignment, you know, grade-wise and horizontal, so like the second and the third grade teachers can communicate. And, you know, so I think about student achievement, also resources, you know, that's just something, you know, I want to think about. And I know, you know, the concern, you know, people talk about, is there enough room? In the past, before the Princeton plan, there was the four sections of K-5 kindergarten and Carol, the fourth section. You know, there was the sections there, and they had the art and the music. You know, I think there's rumors going around that, you know, if there's consolidation, there would be art on a cart or music on a cart, and that clearly was with the Zaborski, Dr. Zaborski's plan. That was proven to be not the case. And again, I'm just concerned about with the incoming kindergartners that are coming in and their level of needs. If we keep it at status quo, you know, their needs being met, academic needs. We have students that are below grade level across the district, and I think we really need to think about that. And the way that we're providing services for those students that are below grade level because of space in the Durham building, I think is an atrocity for those kids, as well as higher achieving students that don't have those issues. So I just want to think about academics, especially that we're in a meeting focus school, and we've, you know, now lost our other elementary principal, which I think is devastating. So I really want to think about that. You know, I hope that you think about that.
Thank you.
Sure.
Two things. First thing is, I'm totally confused by this whole line concept. I'd like to hear more about it. Just kind of baffled by the fact that it could be a half mile from the school and people are going to choose to go further. That really is, I need to hear more about that. And we've spent 25 minutes, almost a half hour, in this room, and in many of the past meetings, we spent a considerable amount of time talking about space and busing. Those should be the last friggin' things we talk about. We are a focused school, and we never get to talk about academics or how we're going to enhance the programming for the kids. We sit here and we talk about space and busing. The second thing I have to say is, I got a call around 9 o'clock this morning, 9:15, letting me know that we received a resignation or somebody's resigning, one of our principals is resigning, Scott Richards. I know you won't talk about personnel matters, so I'm not going to ask you to discuss it. What I'm going to say is, I urge everybody who sits on that board to speak to that man before he leaves. Because I believe an exit survey should be done with him, and something should be put in writing if he's willing to do it as to why he's leaving. Because he was the number one factor for this school potentially getting out of focus status at the elementary level. And today, he announces he's leaving. I'm concerned considerable teachers are now looking at options to leave. He was a strong administrator, and I don't know if this district did everything they could do to keep him here. If somebody leaves because they're leaving for a promotion or they're leaving for a better circumstance, I get that. But it's incumbent upon this board that you people sit down and talk to him, because I know July 1st I will be speaking with him, so I'm not going to bridge anything now. I'm being very quiet, and I'm going to sit here to July 1st. But come July 1st, I will be talking with Scott Richards, and I'll be finding out why he chose to leave this district. Because it's a shame that we lost somebody as good as him, and I can't fathom why he'd want to walk away. He put a lot of work into this district. So I think there's some real good reasons that could probably be garnered. And I hope that you do that. Do we do an exit survey with exiting staff that leave our district? Can anyone answer that? I'm not talking about retirement. I'm talking about people who actually resign from their position and move on. You're supposed to do that. As a professional organization, we should be doing that. So that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Lost the page, but I had it for a minute, and it says that, and it's right on the website for the school district, and it says that under Title I of No Child Left Behind, children have a right to request to attend a higher performing school within the school district. Under some circumstances, they have a right, and I'd read it, but it's gone, but I had it for a second, and it's right from the first several pages of the Caro Durham website, and it quotes Title I and other details, but it is right in there, so you could find it if you have Wi-Fi as opposed to cell service. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, anyway, I probably never find it again. But
anyone else?
I just want to raise a question. It was brought up several times there. This is about the B Clappin, and you had mentioned there was a 20% gain. I'm unaware of that. I feel embarrassed, and I'm not blaming anybody. I'm unaware of that. Could you talk a little bit to that? Because certainly people are using that as an argument to and fro for whether the current plan is working.
How much did Scott Richards have to do with the success of that, and where does that go next year if he's no longer going to be with the district?
I can talk a little bit about that. One of the things that I have asked the principals to do at a recent cabinet meeting, my understanding is that there's an annual report that is done to the board, and I have asked the principals for the timing, what they feel would be an appropriate time to speak to the board and present what is going on in the district currently. And I've asked them to present on the school report card to show the gains that have been made with that. And once again, I do not have the report card particularly in front of me this evening. I do know that it was noted back to me by my administrators that yes, you know, considerable gains are present there.
Are these gains on local produced tests or are these standardized tests?
These are going to be the 2012-13, because your school report card is always 1 year lag behind, and they are going to be on like state assessments. The other pieces is, again, our continuing work with Dr. Kazi. I'm trying to, for the same time that the principals will be reporting on their school report card, I want them to also give information on local assessment measures and the changes that we're seeing there. I want them to talk about everything from attendance and how that, you know, has impacted school district gains, to what are we doing differently this year in terms of title expenditures. All of the professional development that's been happening. What are the teachers doing differently this year than they ever have been before? Some of it will be anecdotal regarding. Okay,
so I'm a little bit confused. So the 20% increase has been measured through what assessments?
Math and AI assessments, the major state assessments.
Okay. And the reason why I asked that, sorry, is because in the past people were saying it was too soon to use data to abandon the realignment plan. Now we have data that's being used there to support the realignment plan. I don't know how you have it both ways.
It just came out.
I understand that this is moving into the second year for the realignment plan.
The other pieces, of course, you realize that, you know, being designated as a focus school and with the extra funds that are, you know, brought to the district and the conversations and plans, you know, we are making gains.
Well, I understand that, but in the past, when there was a movement to renege on realignment and move to consolidation, the argument was that we don't have enough data to do that.
Sure. We didn't at that time.
But there's other data as well. So then I'm going to jump. Was any gain or were gains experienced at CDIs? These gains were from CDE, correct?
That's two. Wasn't it 2012, 2013, these numbers? So it's pre-realignment, correct?
Yeah.
So we have no data from the realignment plan. Is that true?
We have a half year's worth of data from since the realignment. And the rest of the data is going to come from local assessment measures that the district has been, you know, taking in.
So just to be clear then, that half year data, is that for this current year? Or is that backdated for last year?
The half year data that we have is for the 2012-13 school year.
Yes, last year.
So why was the conversation then broached there that since there have been 20% gains in the CDE, which really wasn't CDE, right? That was Durham Elementary?
It would have been the K-1-5 programs in Carroll and Durham.
So at Durham Elementary?
No,
this entire student body elementary.
Right. They were both the two K-5.
Carroll Durham.
Under the old K-5.
Under K-5, yeah.
So how are those gains being interpreted to say that what we're doing is successful?
Those gains are being interpreted to show that the instruction, the curriculum, the increase, the impact is being successful.
But that was last year. Correct?
Yeah, 12-13.
So I don't know how that data would show that what currently is happening in the 2013-2014 academic year would have any reflection upon that. Yeah, so where's that academic data? So then how is that data that is there from the half year of last year? How is that data then being used to support the continuation of the current realignment plan? That makes no sense to me.
See, I think that the difference here is that you are looking at it from the point of view of supporting the current realignment plan. I am simply looking at it in terms of instructional education.
I'm just saying that evidence there, the 20% gains, has been advertised to show that the realignment plan has been effective. And that's what I'm saying. You hear people go around quoting that 20% saying, let's leave things the way they are now with the realignment plan. And that's completely not true.
And the way that for the new assessments, everything, quite frankly, it's going to be apples to oranges to try and compare.
That's another good point. Once again, just to recall to everybody that the assessments have gone through annual changes over the last couple of years, so it is very hard to establish a meaningful base point to show the growth from one year to the next, because assessments, everything from their design to the way that they are scored, are entirely different. But we do have our local tests and assessment measures.
The other thing I would ask is that any kind of presentation, if it could hold off until the newest score, they usually come out mid-August, mid to late August. So it wouldn't make any sense to do anything before then until we at least get them in and give you the freshest.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That was a good point. Thank you. Anything else?
Can I have a motion to move into executive session to discuss issues pertaining to negotiation pursuant to Article 14 of the Civil Service Law with the CDTA to discuss issues pertaining to employment history of particular individuals leading to potential appointment, suspension, discipline of those particular persons?
Move.
I have a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. There will be no action after the meeting. Thank you all for coming.